Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Josie Zanfordino. Zanfordino is a transgender woman and a speech-language therapist. She has a master's in speech-language pathology from SUNY Geneseo. She spent 4 years as a supervisor of the Transgender Voice and Communications Clinic at Ithaca College. In 2014, she developed a telepractice service called Say It Proud Speech Therapy, which includes the Finishing Touch Voice Training Program, personalized voice training for transgender people. In today's interview, we will talk to Josie about her lifelong journey as a transgender woman and her innovative speech therapy programs. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Tish. It's great to be here with you today.
Now, you said that you knew from about the age of 4 years old that you were different, that you were different than other boys and you felt awkward. To tell us a little bit about that feeling.
Sure. So the natural inclination at an early age was to be with the girls and to be in on all the girls' things right from the get-go, which was very, very pleasing to me. And I'm not sure that my parents even noticed.
Yeah.
But when I was in kindergarten, at the age of 4, going on 5, I wanted to play with the girls. And there was a bully in the class who bothered me about that. So we fought, and I still continued to hang out with the girls. So it's that sense of myself as a human being inside a situation that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I didn't want to do the boys' things. I wanted to play jacks, jump rope, play tiddlywinks and hopscotch and roller skate.
How did your parents react to this? Because, I mean, that would be called a tomboy, right? I mean, in some ways.
Yeah.
If you were a girl, but, I mean, it's kind of tomboyish stuff that you wanted to do anyway, right?
Well, my parents were vastly preoccupied with three other children.
Mm.
My mom and dad had my younger sister, Nan, and Robert and Ellen, my brother and sister, who were twins. So by the time I was 5 going on 6, Nan was on the picture, and she was a sickly child. So a lot of attention went there, and I was basically a good kid. So I never got into trouble except when I did, and it was just like I'm just carrying through with doing my stuff.
Uh-huh.
I didn't fit in as a boy. When I looked at the rough and tumble games that boys wanted to play, it was not attractive to me. You know, my dad was trying to get me to play catch when I was 5, and I wasn't interested at all. I wanted to play, you know, like drama games with relatives so I could get into the interactions with them. So There was a parting of the ways there. My dad was a very great man and very set in his ways. As context, my parents were immigrant children's parents. They grew up in the Depression.
Uh-huh.
And so they didn't have a context for anything out of the norm.
Exactly.
And we were loved tremendously.
Yeah. And you also said that you were brought up as a Roman Catholic. So, and there's that whole issue embedded in there, too, about conformity and tradition. And, yeah.
Sure. To be Roman Catholic in the 1950s in churches like Our Lady of Pity in the South Bronx, an Italian parish.
So that was repressive no matter what you were feeling, right? I mean, in some ways.
It's just the pressure to conform is something I've struggled with my entire life. I can't explain enough how much my feelings got pushed underground, and I learned at a very early age that whatever it is that I'm feeling is not safe.
Yeah.
And that I better be careful about how I am. So I'm this little kid, and I don't have a language for what I'm going through. Nothing at all came across my attention until Christine Jorgensen, another Bronx girl from 1957.
Yeah.
You know, she's a he, he's a she, came out in the New York Daily News when it was 3 cents. And you look at this, and it was like, oh, my gosh, somewhere in the deep recesses of my mind, this is possible that a person could transition. So from a very early age, Christine Jorgensen, and much later, Renee Richards.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about Jan Morris? And that was the first person that I ever got in touch with in regard to that kind of a new life.
Didn't know anything at all about Jan Morris until I started to transition much later in life. I didn't know.
So a role model, you know, everybody needs role models. We all know that now, how important role models are. So that kind of rang a bell for you, right? That you weren't just feeling you couldn't fit in with the boys, but you really weren't a boy.
At the time, Tish, I just didn't have a conversation. I didn't have a language about it. So I attempted through most of my life to do things that boys did with very little success. I wasn't good at sports. I wasn't very competitive. And I was mostly interested in getting into conversations with people to figure out how they're negotiating life. And that was, oh my goodness, that was 50 years ago now.
And you also said that you had periods where you started cross-dressing too, dressing up as a woman or a girl.
Yeah.
And so how did that feel to you, though? Were you feeling like you were living more authentically?
Inside a locked bathroom.
Cross-dressing and staying inside a locked bathroom. Ah, so you never went public with it.
No, oh. I was terrified of exposing this. So I kept it highly secret.
Uh-huh.
Kept it secret from my parents, from my sisters, from other people in the family. You know, it was tough growing up inside a paradigm of shame and guilt. And you're supposed to do a certain thing, and you're supposed to be a certain way, and you're supposed to pray to God and go to Mass every day and do these Catholic things because this is what we do here. And so it was difficult to do anything but that.
Yeah, you must have been paralyzed, too.
I was paralyzed.
In some ways, yeah. And, you know, and then that was the era when there were all kinds of psychiatry, you know, theories that you could change people with therapies and, you know, shock treatments and, you know, I mean, all that stuff.
Sure.
I've had gay and lesbian people on, of course, and they've talked about how that was, you know, threatened in their lives. Did you fear that, too?
I did. I came close to going into psychotherapy when I was 18, and a Christian brother friend of mine, who I think is probably gay, told me that it would be a good idea for me to go into psychotherapy because at 17 or 18, I was really feeling rather depressed. And what stopped me was a scarcity conversation I was in. Psychotherapy was expensive. We didn't have a lot of money. I couldn't admit to my parents that I was upset or about anything. They were vastly preoccupied with their own lives and difficulties with my sisters and my brother. And so I just hunkered down.
Wow, that's what an amazing story. Now, Josie, to tell us, so at 48, you said you had to have open heart surgery, and that's when you decided you had to do something, you had to transition.
Yes.
Tell us that story. Tell us what finally made you decide you did need to make a move.
What I want to explain is that, just a little bit here, that I was, the prelude to that was I was, again, trying to do a guy thing. And I was in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, with my dear late friend Ralph Hill. And we were touring the battlefield for the 135th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg.
Mm-hmm.
And at Gettysburg National Battlefield, there are towers, tall towers there, that you could look over the whole landscape. And Ralph is just powering up these things. And I'm at the second flight, and I'm exhausted.
Mm.
And he was heavier than I was. And I said, what's up with this? So they came into town. I've been getting medical care all along, and my really great doctor, Neil Shalish at Family Medicine, said, you know, you might as well go to see Dr. Michael Goodfriend. He's a cardiologist in those days. And so he did his tests and then he called me back into his room and said, you know, they're doing great things with heart surgery these days. And I said, what? What do you mean? And he says, let me show you what is happening inside you.
Oh.
So I don't mind sharing that the posterior leaflets of my mitral valve had ruptured and my heart was just fluttering around in there. So because I have medical people in my family, we got a second opinion. And sure enough, if you're going to continue living, you better get this heart issue repaired. At the time, I didn't have any good idea about what was happening, except that I'm broken, and I need to take 3 months off from a job that I love and doing speech therapy here in town. And was a period of great reflection for me.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And so out of that experience of figuring out at a deeper level who I am, I recognized that there were two major needs in my life. I needed to become a parent, and I needed to transition. I can't explain the voice inside my head that was just screaming at me very loudly, get on with it, get on with it, get on with it. This is your life now, and you can't deny this any longer. So in the period of reflection, I'm looking at, what are you listening to? You're listening to women's music. When you listen to women's music, you're crying. When you're out there with your friends, who are the conversations that you're naturally attracted to? You're out there with women. So brilliant therapist, Dr. Joanne Zager, here in town, just saved my life. And she says, you know, there's an androgynous quality about you. Let's take a deeper look at that. And then it was in an instant when I got that voice that said to me, you've got to get on with this, and you've got to get on with this now. And the process of giving up my shame and giving up that there's something wrong with me that needed to be fixed. I was okay all the time. I just didn't know it. Mm-hmm. I was so deeply hurting, deeply ashamed.
So you got on with it, which means what? You start taking hormones?
Well, the hormones didn't come until about, I'm a late bloomer by any stretch.
A lot of people are.
Seven years after that, I'm finally emotionally stable enough to be able to say, look, it's time to start taking hormones. Mm. In the meantime, I'm starting to make time with transgender people around here. So God bless them. I met Janice Carson, who was leading a group called Southern Tier Gals at the time. Mm. So I went walking into PhD environments down on West State Street and go walking into a group of people that looked a lot like me.
Wow, that must have been a miracle moment.
I was floored. There was a room full of trans women that looked a lot like me. And I said, oh my goodness, this must be the place.
Yeah.
And so that discovery and then claiming the courage to start buying clothes again, God bless Gemma Massera.
Who's local.
And she guided me through the Unitarian Universalist garage sale. That was where I got my first set of women's clothes that I didn't purge.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's so to tell us, I mean, we don't have a lot of time to tell your entire life story, but
tell us what it
was like to dress as a woman and finally, I suppose you could say you finally felt yourself.
It was a very empowering experience for me to be on that path of being self-actualized.
Yeah, and so you were able to walk down the street as you knew you really were, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that must have been amazing.
If
you're just joining us, my guest is Josie Zanfordino. We're talking about her transgender transition that she's been going through all of her life, and she's here sharing it with us. Tell us what it did to your spirit and your head, though. I mean, obviously, you didn't really change that much, right?
No, I didn't.
But your own self-concept and your feeling in the world did, right?
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you brought up about spirit, because when I think about it, this is what sustained me all of these years. There's a poem that I've gotten very close to in recent years. It's by a 14th century Sufi mystic by the name Hafiz.
Mm-hmm.
And to paraphrase it, the poem is, we should talk about this problem. There's someone deep inside of you who's hiding that I have fallen in love with. And I give all these gifts at your doorstep, and still, my dear, you don't come out. And so, my dear, I'll wait patiently for you, and we should talk about this problem. Otherwise, I'm never going to leave you alone.
Yeah.
And so when I read that in the context of coming out, I recognized how profoundly God loves me. And that led me to my faith community, gorgeous people at First Baptist Church. It's an American Baptist church.
Uh-huh.
And so sustained a lot by music, my music, and by the the folk at church and
wow,
it's,
oh, what an amazing story this is. So obviously, Josie, you found yourself, you found some peace in the world, but you also have a world that's coming at you that's homophobic, afraid of this issue. I mean, it's getting better now. People questioning you, people wondering, you know, to be devil's advocate, what you are, you know? I mean, we've heard all the prejudices, all of us have.
Right.
How have you dealt with that aspect of it? I know it can't be easy.
Oh, I beg to differ with you.
Really?
For me, it's very easy. I look upon the world with compassion.
Ah.
And when I look upon the world with compassion and with a certain knowledge that I don't know anybody's journey but my own. And so when I see somebody criticizing me or criticizing transgender people, I say, how could they know? And so then I deal with that compassionately. So then, inside that context, I can educate where I can educate and stay away where I'm not welcome.
Yeah, and feel safe.
Feel safe.
Yeah.
But it's very empowering to me not to make anybody wrong anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't.
Oh, that's a really interesting way of surviving in many ways, you know? I mean,
And living,
too. And to know that they just don't understand and they're afraid. And, I mean, that's the kind of compassion I have for that kind of person who it's really based on fear, a lot of it.
Absolutely. And I think that we're living in a fear-based society. And people are naturally very, very concerned about what's going to happen and all of these types of things. Mm-hmm. And I say, I got what I got, and I don't got what I don't got. And when I can say that, then I can look at, oh, so Josie, what are you going to create today? This may be your last day on the planet. What goodness are you going to create? So I found myself a context to operate in now, surrounded by people who love me, and I'm safe to go and do that and to bring a healthy conversation to my birth family that still doesn't understand and would rather just the whole thing just go away.
Yeah.
And so still, I'm compassionate for them because I don't know the forces that have shaped their lives.
Yeah. You know what? That's the old adage that you have come upon, that when you feel safe and happy and loved inside yourself, you can take on the world in a different way. It's such a great thing. Now, I do. We must talk about the transgender voice work that you do.
Oh,
tell me what that means, that people need voice training. Tell me about that.
Transgender men sometimes, but mostly transgender women, are not helped with their voices with the hormone therapy that they take. And there are two basic problems. The first problem is that they don't feel authentic inside themselves for the voice that they're using when they're talking in a low register. That's one problem. Another problem is that they're wanting to have to play a higher game in life, career-wise, but when they go and speak in a job interview, it's not congruent. They're not congruent. And so what do? We take our training as a speech-language pathologist, and I apply the concepts that I've learned about getting the voice out of the chest and into the head and how to do that safely. So people come to the clinic, which I'm so proud of.
Oh, yeah.
And they get training in how to change their voice safely.
You know what? Almost everybody I meet needs voice training. You know how people talk nowadays?
Uh-huh.
They hesitate and like, and, you know, they insert all these crazy words because they can't think very clearly.
Sure.
Well,
yeah. It's about the thinking around who we are that is difficult to be inside a self-inquiry is difficult because you're having to look at yourself and question yourself. And that's why we have therapy, because we can afford a person an ear for, hey, I know something about what you're going through here that can bring them forward.
So did you have to essentially change your voice too,
and
learn a different way of even phrasing, probably?
I have been working on my voice for the better part of 12 years now, and the voice that I'm using is my voice, and I'm happy with it, and I can't do anything much more about it. You know, I'm in my late 60s at this point, uh-huh. and so the elasticity and the pliability of my cords and my vocal system, even though I'm healthy, is what it is.
Yeah, so, like a male to female transsexual, I mean, trans person is coming to you usually with a deep voice, right? And
yes,
so are you trying
talking.
To change
Excuse
that
me.
Or just the way that, you know, a lot of men are really assertive and they take over the reality. Are you just trying to change actually the way people behave too with the voice training?
Usually the people that are coming to clinic are already on some kind of hormone therapy. And once you start hormone therapy as a transsexual, especially the estrogens, you develop a very quick feeling of calmness and a feeling of, oh my goodness, this is, I speak for myself, it landed the very first time I took estrogen 10 years ago, and it occurred as calm. And also, there's this sense of the things about your brain change.
Mm-hmm.
I saw as a man the disquiet that I had by being compartmentalized in everything. There was a part for work, there was a part for relationship, all of this was very neatly stored and it was pulling me apart. Now, as a woman, life is a lot more, my whole brain is on fire.
It's more integrated.
It's very integrated and very process-oriented. So we work very closely with psychotherapists who are seeing the trans person. We do some counseling, but we're guiding a person not just, oh, you're moving your voice out of your chest and into your head, but there's a psychological correlate with that.
Person's like,
is this my voice now? Maybe we're going to continue to probe it out so that you find something that really works for you, that's natural and genuine for you.
Because it's yourself that you present the world to, and so you're looking for an authentic voice.
Yes, that's right.
That makes sense to me, yeah.
Sure.
That's really interesting. Now, I want to ask you this. You've been going through this all your life, right? I mean, has the world changed in such ways that you would never have imagined right now? I mean, we've got Caitlyn Jenner, we've got TV shows about trans people. We've got so much more acceptance. Are you amazed?
I'm absolutely floored. You know, when I started the trans clinic at Ithaca College, we were one of perhaps five trans clinics at a college level in the entire country.
Wow.
Now there are 20, spreading all across America. And then when you have a celebrity come out like Caitlyn Jenner did, or Laverne Cox, or famous writer Jennifer Finney Boylan, in her brilliant book she's done,
I know her.
Life
yep.
in Two Genders.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. So then all of a sudden the world starts to open up. But the great, great discovery is what Al Gore gave us with the internet, because the internet opened up all the doors and then you could start to find questions answered by going there.
Yeah. Are there support groups here for people that they can?
Yeah, I think it's really rather rich. There's a wonderful support group that our local Planned Parenthood does. It's called Out for Health. It's a creation of a dear friend, Maureen Kelly.
Oh, yes. There,
and she created that. And so then that's one group. And then there's another group that meets at here in town. It's more for the local area. Called Ithaca Transition Group or something. And then there's another group that just formed at Cornell called Transitioning at Cornell. Gorgeous group of young trans men and trans women who are advocating for more transgender rights at Cornell University.
That's so great how much has opened up. It's amazing.
Yes.
Now, we don't have that much time. Can you tell me what you would say to someone who says, I don't understand what you guys are doing? To tell us where we are now. I mean, you guys must have some talking points that you can give people who really, really don't understand.
I would put the question back on them to say, when there was a point in time in your life, have you ever had a point in time where something came up for you about you that really quite surprised you, and all of a sudden it had a profound impact on you that you got your life to change, whether it was changing a major or changing a relationship? Do you ever have a major life change happen like that for you? And usually the person says yes, because everybody goes through that. And then I say, imagine what it's like for a person to live every single day on the planet having this gnawing question go around and around and around your head without resolution, without how do I find a common denominator for myself for the limited amount of time that I'm on the planet. And so do I choose a life of being dead, or being dead inside, or literally dead, or do I choose to claim the courage to do the life that I know I'm needing to do for however much time I'm granted? And sometimes that occurs. Sometimes it's that I'm so generous with people. So when I'm being screamed at by my younger sister that the president is evil, I say I recognize how incredibly difficult it is for her to have that type of conversation going on. And so I'll say to her, I can see that you're upset and that this has got some questions for you that are really hurting you. Did I get that right? So attempting to relate and attempting to be in somebody else's shoes to tell me, what is this experience like for you? Sometimes that helps.
Yeah, and what do you need to make that experience better, to resolve it?
Yeah.
That's the question that I
How is it that you can, you know, say that, you know, you're a member of my family and you disdain me? How is that when all I've given you is kindness and I've given you this gift that I'm finally living the life that I know I need to live?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sometimes they can be reflective about that, or sometimes they say, well, all right, just go ahead and do what you want to do, but I'm not going to bother you about it anymore. And I say, okay, I got that. And that works for you? And they say to me, yes, that works for me. And I say, bingo, that's all we can do.
Yeah.
Is be for ourselves.
Yeah, that
Shakespeare
makes sense.
Said, you know, to thine own self be true. So if it applies to me, it's got to apply to 7 billion other people on planet Earth.
Exactly. Can you give some contact information? We are out of time. People can get in touch with you. And say the name of your voice organization again.
Thank you. I'm called Say It Proud Speech Therapy. And I am Josie at sayitproudspeechtherapy.com. And my program is the Finishing Touch Voice Training Program. I do it online with transgender people all across New York and Florida.
That's great. Well, Josie Zanfordino, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing this story. And thank you for educating all of us and continuing your life in such an honorable manner. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Tish. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.